powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Happy Friday, you guys. Of course, Bump has the Masters on in the studio. Thanks for turning this on for me. I'm so excited that this is what we're watching.
I know
you're
concerned about Scheffler and DeChambeau.
I am concerned about Tiger. Scheffler, what with his negative 6 points.
Negative six points. Yes.
Of course, you got Rory McIlroy, -1 points. I know that this isn't how you talk about golf, but I'm going to keep doing it as like Masters updates throughout the day. This is not what we're talking about to start the show. Instead, we're talking about the Seahawks, of course, because we are less than 2 weeks away from the draft. And the most important position in football is still up for grabs for the Seahawks if they're interested. So let's get to some of what we learned from John Schneider the other day. John Schneider was on with Wyman and Bob, by the way. Take a listen to him confirming news that they brought in Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler for visits and then explaining why.
Yeah, no, we don't study quarterbacks. Just because we've only drafted two, I get it.
Yeah.
We want to get to know these guys a little bit better and spend time with them. And Spencer's a real impressive guy, and so is Bo. And we just wanted to be able to spend a little bit more time with those guys, have the coaches be able to spend more time with them on the board. And, yeah, you want to cautious of their time as well. They're out here on West Coast visits, so try to set those up when they're, you know, visiting the Rams, the Chargers, the Niners, and try to fit those in. And we love Sam. We love what we did, being able to acquire Sam. You know, we talked about the age. He's got the experience, but that doesn't preclude us from, you know, what we do in the draft.
You know what I just heard, Bump? Blah, 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 blah. We took Sam, but it doesn't mean we won't take someone in the draft. That's the only part that matters to me, the only part that stands out, and it is the most important part of that entire response.
I don't agree. I told you yesterday, they ain't taking no damn quarterback.
Yes, they will.
You got Sam Howell, you got Geno over there. You got the best of both worlds with Sam Howell. You got a young guy with experience. You got the number 16 pick. Are you going to flip that and move back and get a quarterback later in the draft? I don't think so. I think that if they do get a quarterback in the draft, it's going to be around 6-7. He's going to come in, be a camp arm, and they're probably going to cut him like they did Alex Magoo back in the day. I just don't believe they're going to do it. But this is what they're doing. You know, we work here in an office, and then there's fire extinguishers. At least back in the day, they used to put them behind glass and say, break glass in case of emergency. Pull that thing out, and let's get going. That's what these visits are. That's just in case of emergency, we are capable of breaking the glass because we've done our homework on these guys. And every year, they bring quarterbacks in. Every year, Russell Wilson was here for 100 years. They brought in 100 quarterbacks. It don't matter. I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback this year. I could be wrong. You know, I'm not, you know, no one's perfect in life, except my wife, of course.
Of course.
She's never lose the battle. She's never wrong.
Yep.
But in this situation, I could be wrong. I just don't think it's going to happen. You do what you're supposed to do and look at everybody.
I'm going to bring a fighter into my corner here.
All right.
One Bob Condotta talking about whether or not he thinks that they're adding a third quarterback.
Yeah, I definitely do. You know, he said that to us when we talked to him at the league meetings a couple of weeks ago as well, right after they'd made that trade. And you know, he said the biggest thing it did was it meant they don't have to. If you'd gone into the draft with only Geno, then you were going to have to take a quarterback somewhere because you're going to probably have to sign an undrafted rookie free agent probably as well to add a third quarterback to the roster. So I think one way or the other, they're going to add a quarterback here. But I don't think it precludes it at all. You know, they didn't really invest that much. The trade they made for Sam Howell isn't, you know, they sort of just moved down with a couple of their picks, but it wasn't like they gave the picks away. And then there's almost zero financial investment in Sam Howell. I mean, there's no guaranteed money and contracts at about $1 million, you know, salaries of about $1 million. So you could easily fit another quarterback onto the roster.
Now, I know that I'm in the hot take industry, Bump, but the question to me isn't necessarily whether or not they take a quarterback. The question to me is if someone like Michael Penix will be available at 16, but if someone like Michael Penix is tempting enough for them, do they pull the trigger early or
you think
do
Penix
they go,
will be available at 16?
I do.
I'm hearing other
I've
stuff
seen
too.
Him mocked at 12.
I've seen him at 12 and 13.
I saw him
Raiders
going to the Raiders.
Well.
Yeah, I went with a Raiders, Q Myers, who hosts a Raiders show.
Yeah.
I went on with them and they had the Raiders taking him.
Yeah.
So I will say, like, it's not fully
things are
guaranteed.
Changing. Things are weird.
But if someone like Michael Penix is there, I don't think J.J. McCarthy would ever fall there. He's been mocked so high. But do they pull the trigger or do they go with someone on day three to add depth that maybe, you know, can compete with Sam Howell for a backup and that they can maybe, you know, squeak through to the practice squad? That to me is the question, not whether or not they take a quarterback. But I could be absolutely wrong. The draft is a guessing game for everyone, even people that know a ton about football.
Let me change my statement. they're not drafting a quarterback early to compete with Sam or Geno. If they grab a quarterback, it's going to be late or an undrafted free agent because you need quarterbacks in the camp. And if a guy goes off and balls out and competes, then so be it. But I don't think they're going to draft someone to compete directly with Geno, with Sam Howell. But again, you never know. This is the time of the year where GMs, coaches, they're all going to say things to leave all possibilities out there and make things interesting. So, you know, we shall see. And John should bring in quarterbacks. He should bring in linebackers. He should bring in running backs. He should bring in offensive linemen, defensive linemen, because this game is violent. Guys get hurt, and you need depth. And then things happen in the draft as well. And there might be a few picks before you that don't go out or don't plan out the way you thought. And then guys are available, so you got to be able to pivot. So this just allows them to pivot if need be. We shall see, but there will definitely be another quarterback in training camp.
Well, that's exactly. And like in the past, they have brought in maybe an undrafted free agent, you know, to kind of compete there and basically work with the third team in camp. This is about how high we think that investment will be. I don't think it's out of the question that they use their first pick on a quarterback. I think it's ill-advised. I think you need to address your trenches. I think you have given money to Geno and spent a third rounder on Sam Howell. Like I would look elsewhere on the roster. However, I don't know that they leave. I don't think they leave the draft without taking a quarterback. Okay. It's just hard for me to see it. But it's just because I'm selfish and it's fun radio fodder to be able to talk about quarterback competitions. And I know that there are other things they need to address. So let's talk about it. Here's John Schneider talking about one of the position groups that they know they need, which is linebackers, explaining how he scouts that particular position group.
And there's different stages of the year to do it in as well. So I would say if you're talking about college guys, you know, it's during the fall. And in that process, I kind of do more of the old school deal where, like, defense, you have the list of guys on defense and you just go game to game. And so you're going, okay, corner, you're doing both the corners, you're doing a linebacker and a defensive tackle and an end or something, right? So the more people we have to study, the merrier, right? So, you know, I was really blessed to be around Ted Thompson, who played a long time, and John Dorsey, and those guys really helped me, you know, with the position in terms of eyes, feet, flexibility, take on ability, hands, you know, stack and shed. Like, it's really been a process of just, like, early on of studying, like, kind of creating a library of the different types of linebackers. If it, you know, it's a undersized Will that can run, or a, you know, a heavy Mike that can, you know, or I don't know if you guys call them Teds or whatever you call them, but like the guy that can, like the Levon Kirkland's that can come downhill and take on guards and stuff. Yeah. Like
I
yourself.
Need to call them Teds more often. That's what I need to do.
You like that?
Yeah.
You like Ted's?
Start using it. But yeah, that's John talking about just kind of scouting specific stuff. Let's go to, I think you might like this cut. This is John Schneider talking about how their approach to the draft has changed.
I think maybe just being more patient, maybe. You know, I think we were hyper aggressive and we felt like we needed, yeah, we did. We felt like we needed a lot. Mm-hmm. And so we made a trade with Tennessee. We traded for Vickerson and Lindell White. We moved around several times and we almost moved totally out of an area that would have cost us. Or also being patient.
We've gotten a lot more patient during the draft since the first one we did here. Do you see that?
I guess you can see it. What does patient mean? He has to explain patient, right? That means you're not reaching, I guess, in the earlier rounds and trying to find something that's not there. Maybe it means they're not drafting. What's their model? We're not drafting for need. We're drafting the best player out there. If that's the case, then yeah, I can see that because I'll just use the last couple of seasons, for example, or drafts. You know, you go lineman with your number 9, you go DB with your number 5, and then number 20, you go wide receiver. Yeah, being patient, I think, means that also they're not jumping the gun when it comes to trying to trade back or move up or whatnot. They have a philosophy that they think is working for them. The last couple of drafts have been okay, too. I would say the last 4 minus 2021, I would say I give the last 4 drafts at least a B grade because they got guys who are contributing now. I can see them being patient. You know what being patient would be for me? Not picking a dang quarterback at 16. Not reaching to go get a quarterback. You got Geno. You got Sam Howell. Man, go get your quarterback late. That's being being patient. If they draft a quarterback in 16, I'm going to play this clip for you and be like, Stacey, he was lying. They ain't being patient.
Okay, well,
we
okay.
want mess, Bump. That's what we
Yes,
truly
exactly.
Want.
Have fun, John. See, I'm playing with house money. I'm sitting here going, draft a quarterback with every pick. Why not? Because my
Seven
job isn't on the line. Exactly. Well, okay, I'm going back to the quarterback conversation. If you don't take a quarterback in the class this year, keep in mind that your options could be slim next year. Here's Mel Kiper Jr.
Shador Sanders from Colorado is going to be the number one pick overall, or be in line to be the number one pick overall next year. And Carson Beck from Georgia certainly will be a guy to keep an eye on to see if he develops like he has shown the promise already to be a high pick. And then we have to see how the transfers settle in. Cam Ward, you know, leaving Washington State, Miami. Uyangalele going from Oregon State to, you know, to Florida State. Things like that, I think we have to see how they develop, how those quarterbacks, Riley Leonard leaving Duke for Notre Dame, what happens there. But the two that really jump out are certainly Shador Sanders and Carson Beck.
So if you don't take a quarterback now, are you confident enough in that class to take a swing?
We have to see. You got to play a whole year of football. Do you see what Jaden Daniels did this year? Stock just skyrocketed. Before that, he's at Arizona State, and everyone's saying, oh, he has some potential. Then he goes to a different school, gets some more weapons, develops for a year, and now he's a Heisman Trophy candidate. So I don't know. I got to wait and see. If I'm going off of right now, I think this class is clearly more talented than next year's class is going to be, but there's always going to be a Drake May in that piece that just wows some people for some reason. I don't get it, and moves up in the stock. So right now, no, but I think there will be some development, and we'll get some names from some guys that we haven't heard from. Before this year, I knew who Drake May was, but he wasn't on my radar like that. Before this year, I know who Jaden Daniel was and thought he was going to go to LSU and struggle a bit because of what I saw at Arizona State. So it's hard to say definitively next year's class isn't going to live up to this one, but right now I can say that, but you got to wait and see how young guys develop. If they don't get a quarterback this year, they're banking on a quarterback who can legitimately compete with Geno and Sam Howell. If they don't get it this year, I think next year you look to maybe trade Sam Howell or trade somebody else and go get yourself a veteran, because I think the team, they're building around the quarterback right now. The quarterback isn't the centerpiece. They already have that. They're trying to say, okay, how can we support this guy? If you can support a quarterback and say this quarterback room doesn't work out and you have these other pieces in places already, it's easier to go get a veteran or a guy who's 2-3 years in the league and say, all right, let's give him a chance to see what happens.
When I put my radio host hat on, I just want chaos and a story to talk about. You know what I mean? Like, if I think, like, I put my radio host hat on and they take a quarterback with their first pick, fun, great. I have 1,000,005 topics that'll last me hours and hours and hours and hours of on-air planning. If I put my analyst hat on, as I'm asking you to do right now, you always have that hat on. You put your analyst hat on. Now, how do you feel about the Seahawks if they take a quarterback with their first pick?
My analyst hat says that they don't believe in what they got in the room right now. Or they think, like you mentioned, that next year they won't be able to go get a guy to be their leader of this organization. If they get a quarterback with number 16, I'm looking at Geno and I'm looking at Sam and saying, hey, they was bluffing. They lied to y'all. They don't believe in you in the way that they made it seem. And that's the NFL. That's business. You don't show your hand when you're negotiating, when you're trying to make things happen in your favor. Because, yes, this is a team sport, and, oh, we love him. We love Geno. Yeah, you love them until they can't produce for you no more, and then you move on. That's just how it is. Or you love them until you see something else that you feel like is better than that, so then you pursue that. It's a shady game, man. It's not a shady game. It's just business. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. So, you know, we'll see what they think about Geno and Sam Howell by the number 16 pick.
Is there, to you, a missed opportunity there? Should they go with quarterback over, say, the trenches, over another position?
Nah, because I think Geno can win you a couple playoff games. And I think that it's not a sprint. I think you have a couple of years to try to get this thing right. You still got some young talent on the line. You got young talent in the secondary. You got young talent when it comes to the edge rushers. It's about moving along strategically. You can go the Niners route. You can go the Rams route and just we're all in.
Right.
And maybe you hit or miss. Look at the Niners right now, all the talent in the world. I just talked about them a few weeks or a couple of days ago. All the talent in the world. In 5 years, they've been to the conference championship, what, two or three times, Super Bowl two or three times, have not walked away with a championship, and now the money's about to get funny because you got to pay Brock Purdy. So, I don't know, we'll see. There's no perfect way to win a Super Bowl. I just think that they're going to do it methodically for the next couple of years.
All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Mariners open up a six-game homestand tonight against the Cubs only on Apple TV+. What's the real headline?
This is year three of Apple TV baseball, so Wyman and Bob are running out of excuses.
That's right.
They got to figure this out at some point, man. Do they know right now it's going to be on Apple TV+.
They'll know soon. No, I don't think they know right now.
I don't think they know right now either.
Before they get to the station, they'll figure it out.
They will be stunned to find out it's on Apple TV+. And then they make Mike Lefko fix their TVs for them, and he's not even in the room with them. Yeah, they're always like, Mike, how do I get Apple TV+?
You just go to the app.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think Wyman knows how to operate apps on his TV?
Yeah, he knows how to do that.
Okay, first, my stepdad is 80 years old and can figure it out. It took a while for us to teach him.
But did your stepdad play football in the 80s and 90s?
That's very true. He did not. That's a very good point.
Y'all get off of my Wyman. You got it, Wyman. You got it,
we
baby.
We believe in you. From Brandon Gustafson, who's joining us today at 1 p.m. to talk about the Mariners, the 2024 Seattle Mariners are on pace to have more strikeouts than any team in MLB history. They're averaging 10.62 strikeouts per game, which is the worst mark in baseball. So what are we watching for in today's game, folks? Fewer strikeouts. That is correct.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Ipe Mizuhara, the former interpreter for Shohei Ohtani, reportedly lost $183 million in sports bets, but he did win $140 million, leaving himself with a net winnings of minus $40 million.
Oh, no.
That's the real headline.
And I thought I had a problem shopping on Amazon. That car stays full. I have a bit of a spending problem when it comes to Amazon, but I'm not touching eBay's debt.
You got more of a potential spending problem because the cart is full, but it's not like you're just every day buying two or three products. It's like you're looking at it and saying, what if? Maybe I could get this.
Can I tell you something, my toxic trait? I would say every day I add one product to the cart.
Oh, wow.
Dang.
Every day?
I look at Amazon almost every day.
Have you accidentally hit, because on Amazon they have the like one click buy.
Why does Brady look so concerned? I don't buy something every day.
Have you accidentally clicked the one click buy on something and been like, uh-oh, I don't have the means to afford this.
I have definitely clicked the one click. No, because I don't look at like crazy expensive things. Okay. It'll be like little like, a drain cover.
Trinkets.
Things that I don't need. Just things no one needs them. But you find yourself being like, well, I'll toss it into the cart. What's $4? And then you get 40 of those.
You know what's become really dangerous with online shopping is TikTok has added a shop feature where if you see a video for a product, you can literally just buy it from that video. It's great for like Christmas shopping and like birthdays, but man, like you see stuff and it's like, oh, I could have this right now in my house if I just click buy.
Well, that's why when Amazon was doing the any of the games in particular, the Dolphins, who they play, Chiefs game, but anytime they do anything, they have the little scan items to be like, oh, you can buy this, go ahead and scan it. I mean, it's brilliant. It's also just...
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous, a little depressing.
360, my kid bought $1,200 of stuffed animals on Amazon.
Stop, how'd that happen?
Fortunately, my card declined.
How'd that happen?
I probably just add in every stuffed animal they see.
They're using your phone, then you autofill all your information. Your car's connected to your phone, kids press in, boom.
What's the most costly mistake, Bump, that your kids have ever done?
Well, it wasn't a mistake. Them fools was buying V-Bucks and all that extra bucks. Remember when games used to be free? You just beat the level, get a passcode, write it down, and move on. Now I'm like, the game is $60. Now you just added another $50 on top of that. Every month, they're asking me for another $15. Hey, good. I mean, they're making their money, but
this
goodness
is
gracious.
Another get off my lawn segment
it
waiting
is.
To happen. It's
it
just
is.
Games used to be free and you used to earn your way to the top. You used to earn coins.
One time we were at the grocery store and we had a bunch of like digital coupons that, you know, knocked off a few bucks off the total price. And we went to go pay and then Willow went and pressed one of those buttons where it's like, would you like to donate to this charity? And the button she pressed wiped out all of the discounts that we have.
Oh, no.
It's just like, I love you, but I'm really frustrated right now.
Someone said, what's the cost of your Amazon cart right now? I'm afraid to look.
I'm interested. I'd say over $1,500 easily.
I'll look during the break.
Easily over $1,500.
Well, because that's my problem is I add it to the cart. I don't click save for later. I don't create a list. I just add to cart, add to cart, add to cart. And then I go through and I like, you know, get rid of everything.
Yep. But...
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, round one play of the Masters was suspended yesterday due to darkness. So Tiger will have to attempt to complete 23 holes today. What's the real headline?
Michael Bumpus might be more concerned with Tiger making the cut than he was getting cut by the Seahawks.
Wow.
Dang,
Stacey.
I'm sorry.
Coming for his head.
I'm
false
sorry.
Accusations. You ever been cut by an NFL team?
No.
It's not pleasant. It's not pleasant. Like, hey,
I'm sure it's
hey,
not.
Bob, hey, we want to talk to you upstairs. They want to talk to you upstairs. It's a wrap. Go ahead and start making your phone calls and telling your peoples that you are unemployed. So, no, that ain't accurate, but I am concerned for Tiger.
Right. I'm really concerned. It's not accurate, but the point is poking fun at you for caring so deeply about Tiger.
I do.
Who actually sat you down? Is that person still in the building?
Nah, heck no. Nah. What? We were 2-14. Ain't nobody in that building.
See, that's the thing.
Gone.
That guy told you, and then he went and was like, I got to actually pack up my boxes too.
He said, actually.
I'm walking out with you. Are you getting a cab?
Can I ride with you? Yeah. Can I ride with you? Yeah, come on. I got you, dog.
We can go too. All right, you guys. We are going to stick with the Mariners and baseball for most of the first hour, and then we're getting into a draft preview. We've been rotating days on first, you know, who the Seahawks could choose with their first pick, and then every other day we're doing a segment called Drafting Seahawks, which is where we look at a couple guys, sometimes one guy, sometimes a few, that just kind of fit with this team that could be really interesting options. So these are the names that you want to keep in your back pocket for once you get into day two, day three of the draft. This is not a pick number 16 overall type pick. This is, hey, I remember hearing about that guy, and now I have something to tell my friends when we're all watching the draft together. I'm assuming everyone watches the draft with their friends. Maybe not. Maybe not. That's coming up
Going
at
over,
11.
Everybody.
I know. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. The Mariners have a chance to turn things around this weekend. But before they do, we got to talk about a big problem. It's not just strikeouts. That's next.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
I will start this segment by saying that I think you'll feel better about the Mariners by the end of it, but it's going to be a rip off the Band-Aid process where the beginning is going to be a little bit painful because we got to talk about the Mariners' issues. The Mariners are striking out a ton. You and I, Bump, talked about that in headline rewrites about 10 minutes ago. We already know that. They're on pace to strike out more than not just any team in baseball, but more than any team in baseball history. Neither you nor I think that that pace is going to keep up. It's pretty impressive and pretty hard to strike out over 10 times per game. The other issue is really what's going to help them cut down on those strikeouts and help everything. They're not getting enough from their core. They are not getting enough from the core players, the best players, the leaders on this team, Bump.
Nah, they're not. You know, that's 1 through 5. Those are the guys you need to kind of set the tone and get the party started. They are getting mad contributions from Ty France, though.
They are.
If there's anybody in Haniger's been playing decent as well. But you're right, man. We're just, I mean, just basic stats. You're looking at Julio, 196 average. He's got an on-base percentage of 255, so 25% essentially. Slugging 216, OPS 470. Not the guy that we're used to seeing. He only has one extra base hit so far. Mitch Haniger has two extra base hits. Mm-hmm. Ty France has two. Mitch Garver has two. Luis Urias has too. It's like, all right, we're not seeing the Julio that we're used to seeing, but we feel like he's going to get there. J.P. Crawford has kind of been turning a corner as of late, I feel like. He's batting 140 on base of 232, slugging 260, OPS of 492. You need several guys at least around 700 or above when we talk about OPS for this team to be doing what they're supposed to do. Jorge Polanco, we're still waiting on him. He's had his moments. He has a bomb, no extra base hits. He's batting 196. So you just look at 1 through 5, minus Haniger, who's having a decent season so far, and Ty France, they're not getting it done so far. So we're just trying to figure out what exactly the issue is. We're talking in the Sports Pit. Our guy Brady Bones had a good comment. He goes, man, they're waiting on the pitch that they want and not the pitches that they're getting. And then the pitches that they're getting, they're not making good swing decisions. So when I see the confusion from major leaguers, when to swing, when not to swing, which direction to take these pitches, I'm thinking, what's the philosophy with this group? Is the philosophy that messed up to where mentally they don't have an approach at the plate? Or is it these guys just aren't executing? Because sometimes you can put the right people in the right places, have the right swing thoughts, and get everything all lined up, but they're human beings. They still got to go out and execute the plan. So that's the tough part, is really trying to figure out what it is, because this team was built not to strike out a lot.
Yep.
They're striking out hell extremely. All right. They were built to drive in runs, not really doing that. They were built to be tough on the mound, and they only had a couple starts where they have looked tough on the round. So what exactly is it? Is it coaching? Is it execution? We got to figure this thing out.
Yeah, it's hard not to look at execution as part of it. And I also fall into that trap, Bump, of being like, not the one that you're laying out, the one that I think any of us do as longtime Mariners fans. I often fall into that place of being like, well, you Mariners decision makers should have added more, and you Mariners decision makers should want to win as much as I do and as much as these players do. And all of that's true. Like, I would have loved to see the Mariners spend more in free agency or make more moves or have a sense of urgency in terms of winning a World Series. I would have liked to see that. However, they have added some pieces that I was particularly interested in to start the season. And at a certain point, players got to play. Like, at a certain point, Jerry DePoto can't get out there and swing a bat. And even Scott Servais can't get out there and make you do anything. And I think that the thing that makes it so hard to answer is, I think a lot of this might be mental. Like, I don't know how much of this is purely, oh, they're not being coached up the right way. I do think that there's a pressure that as an athlete, and you know more about this than anyone, having been an athlete, when me and many listeners haven't, I would imagine there's a pressure you put on yourself and on your team when you start stumbling out of the gate.
Yeah, for sure. Could you imagine the pressure Julio feels, being a two-time All-Star, got MVP votes last year, is considered one of the favorites to win the MVP this year, and is the highest paid player on this team? Of course he feels that pressure. He wants that pressure. He's paid to take that pressure and go out and lead no matter what happens. So definitely he's going through his stuff. Could you imagine being a Cal Raleigh and knowing that, look, my job is to hit bombs and go yard and to throw guys out, get in a second. And I'm not doing either right now. Granted, he does have, what, two bombs this year, both against Toronto, I believe. He's starting to heat up. They feel that pressure. And pressure's not always bad either. Pressure ain't always, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Pressure is, I got to step up for my squad. I got to step up for my boys. And pressure can influence your decisions as well. So that could be it, or part of it. It's never just one thing why a team isn't executing in certain phases of the game. But you would think that pressure is one of those things. These guys know what the reputation of Seattle is. Going to break your heart at the end of the season. They know that the perception of this team right now is that they still can't hit balls that are spinning on them, and they're going to rely on their pitching. So as an athlete, as a competitor, I hear that and go, I need to do more. I need to step up. But then what happens? You start being tight. You start making poor decisions. You start trying to force the issue a bit. I talked to my baseball guy, Derek Bingaman. He's the head baseball coach at Lake Washington High School. He's been there for like 20, 25 years. Whenever I have baseball questions, he's the first guy I go to, other than obviously Curtis. And he goes, look, we're waiting to see, is this real or is this fluke? And I go, well, I'm going to wait about 30 games before I give a definitive, all right, this is what that team is. I go, well, how far do you wait? He goes, yeah, I wait about 35, 40 games. But he goes, but the more you start to see it, the more you start to believe that this is who they are.
Right.
Like, when do you, what my mom used to say, a tiger never changes his stripes. My mom used to hit me with all that. So a zebra never changes his stripes. I'm like, all right, man, we got to start, I hope these stripes ain't in permanent marker. We got to start wiping this thing off and start seeing some stuff, which we have seen some. We have seen it. That's why it was important that they left Canada the way that they left, a win, rallying in the 10th inning, and showing us and showing themselves, most importantly, that they're capable of going on these rallies.
You are so right, though. Like, it's one thing when you've seen an up and down version of a team, the way that Toronto has, for instance, with their team, and you're thinking, like, well, which version is it? Is it an offense that can get hot, or is it one that absolutely stumbles, you know, and has pitching struggles? With the Mariners, you've seen mostly a team that struggled, and I'm shocked their record is what it is. Like, it's, you have seen more bad than good when it comes to this team, and that starts to accelerate that process of thinking you know who this team is, because all of a sudden you don't have a sample size of 10 good games and 10 bad ones. You have maybe a handful of solid moments, mm-hmm. and then lots of concern. I mentioned that we would be leaving this segment, leaving you feeling a little more optimistic.
Can I say one more thing before we get optimistic? Mm-hmm. Another thing that has us questioning, what's Jared Kelenic doing? What's Geno doing?
Ballin.
What's Tayo doing?
Ballin.
That's another thing that points where I'm like, is it mental? Is it coaching? Like, what are they saying to these players? Or what is the vibe around here? When you see guys leave and go do their thing, obviously there are other factors in that, but it also makes you question what's going on.
Very, very good point. Let's get to some of what Jeff Passan had to say. And then we'll move on to talking about the biggest story in sports. It doesn't have anything to do with Seattle, but it is important. First, Jeff Passan on why he thinks Mariners pitching will be able to bounce back.
Go and look at the differences between ERA and fielding independent pitching, which is it's a pretty simple stat, actually, that takes into account the walks, strikeouts, and home runs that you've allowed. It essentially tries to and does a pretty decent job of predicting future performance. And when there's a big gap between ERA and FIP, that means that there's going to be some positive regression to the mean. And I believe every Mariner starter has a higher ERA. In Luis Castillo's case, a significantly higher ERA than his FIP, which means it's probably gonna get better.
Feels confident in the pitching, also not ready to write the Mariners off.
I'm not there yet. We do this every year, guys. Sometimes it's the Mariners, sometimes it's other teams that start off really bad. This may be cold comfort, but the fact that they're 4-7 when, like, everybody on the team but Ty France can't hit right now is actually a good thing, because you're right. By run differential, I believe they've got the fourth worst run differential in baseball right now. And the other three teams are really bad.
So, again, the stats are bad, but Jeff Passan's basic point, Bump, is they've done it before.
Yeah, it's they've done this before. We've seen them climb out of it. It's just you don't want to feel this feeling because it's too familiar. You feel this every single year. You feel like, all right, just wait, just be patient. And I know y'all are tired of hearing about it. Oh, we don't want to be patient. We want them to come out swinging. Yeah, that would be nice. But reality is there's a bunch of baseball to be played. You listen to guys like Passan talk about the trends and the stats that lead. If my team is rushing for 4.5 yards a game and we've yet to really have a breakout game running the football, I'm going to say we're almost there, guys. 4.5 a clip. Big runs are going to happen. We will get there. That's essentially what Passan is saying. Is like, look, man, this shouldn't last forever.
All right, we're going to take a look around the rest of the AL West coming up later in the show. There is some good news for the Mariners there. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. The latest news on Shohei Ohtani has us all wondering about how legacy is affected by rumor. Don't go anywhere.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
The biggest story in sports over the last 48 hours has nothing to do with the Seattle Seahawks or the Seattle Mariners or any local team at all, but we do have to cover it because there's an interesting conversation to be had about legacy. And who doesn't love a conversation about legacy? Of course, this is about Shohei Ohtani. So an IRS agent, this is a federal investigation into accusations that Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, had gambled away a ton of money. So this just came out yesterday in a press conference, and then the filing itself, the criminal complaint, was filed yesterday and is available for public consumption. So there was all kinds of information to come from this bump. And I want to have two conversations. The first is whether you feel confident in saying Ohtani had nothing to do with this after learning some of the information that was new information from this, that being that Mizuhara had changed the email address and contact number of Shohei Ohtani's bank to his contact information, that he had pretended to be Shohei Ohtani when calling the bank, giving them information to authorize wired funds, and that he had been texting hundreds of times directly with the bookmaker saying things like, oh, I've been exploring soccer, like kind of like an almost personal ownership over his own gambling and what he's doing. do you feel after hearing all this information? Like, yeah, I'm more convinced Shohei has nothing to do with it.
My wife hates this about me. I don't trust anything or anyone 100%. I just don't. Like, you don't even trust me 100%? Nah, babe. It's like 0.1% where I'm like, I gotta keep my head on the swivel. Nah, but it does make me believe more that Shohei has nothing to do with this. You look at some of the quotes that you got from this dude saying to the bookie, the bookie saying to Edie, whatever his name is. What's his name?
Ipe,
go Boilermakers. things will be out of my hands. Things will be out of my hands. He's pretty much saying, like, look, man, if I don't get my money, something might happen to your boy. And also, he's apparently sitting at the beach watching Shohei walk his dog. One, I doubt Shohei is in the public by himself walking his dog. Maybe he had people around him. He made it seem like he was by himself and I'm going to go get him. And then the interpreter saying, technically, I did steal from him. It's all over for me. All this stuff makes you believe that Shohei didn't have anything to do with this. I'm just always thinking about the cover up. You know, what are the dates and all these conversations? If you have them, shoot them to me. I mean, yeah, it does. They are painting the perfect picture to make sure Shohei has nothing to do with this. And yeah, I mean, you talk about the money that was being taken. How do you take $16 million and no one notices? I understand that Shohei has a lot of money, but $16 million is a bit. $4 million, I can see. Kind of like, all right, that can get lost in the shuffle. You got properties over here, properties over there, a business here. All right, it can get lost. But $16 million kind of changed this thing for me. I also saw something that said old boy was making from 2021 to 2024, 25 bets per day.
Yep.
25 bets per day, yet nothing was red flagged in this whole situation. So you look at the evidence that they are giving us, the stuff that they are allowing us to consume. I look at that and go, all right, that makes sense. But then I see something as simple as old boy making 25 bets per day and no one's seeing this. There's no red flags going on. That's where I keep that 0.1, that 2% or whatever it is to make me think that I can't trust everything that we see in here.
I am going through all the text messages and was reading through many of them yesterday and today. And it is hard for me not to see like the ownership in what he's texting. And again, he doesn't know at this point that any of this is going to get found out. Like, there could easily be text messages that were uncovered. There are hundreds of messages they went through. There could easily have been messages that were like, yeah, Shohei and I want to place this bet. Mm-hmm. Or like, yeah, my boss wants to place this. But there aren't any of those. Instead, you get stuff like him saying, you know, he's not responding to calls. And then Ipe says, hey, I got to be honest, I ended up losing a lot of money in crypto the last couple of years. And I just took a huge hit, obviously, with sports too. Then he asks about settling the amount. He says, I've lost way too much on the site already. Of course, I know it's my fault. So it's like he has this kind of, he uses I a lot. I don't know. I was reading through all of the documents thinking like, I am becoming more convinced Shohei had nothing to do with this. However, the reason that I thought this topic was interesting is there are other examples we can think of in sports where some kind of rumor or some kind of mystery or some kind of question just ended up following someone forever. And I think that's going to happen with Ohtani. I don't think Ohtani's going to get into any trouble with this whatsoever. I don't think MLB's interested in making him, you know, in punishing him for this. And I think that this investigation by this IRS agent found that he did nothing wrong and he's a victim in this case. So I don't think anything comes from it. But I think that there will always be a question that some people have about whether or not he knew and whether or not Ipe was a fall guy. Like, unfortunately, that's how rumor forever works. Once that, you know, once the lid is off the jar, you can't put it back on. The toothpaste is out of the tube.
Yeah. And you know what? Americans will look over it. It'll be a topic of discussion.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It'll be a joke for the rest of Shohei's career. Rest of the time he's here, oh, you doing that Shohei? Don't be doing that Shohei. You see what Diddy's going through right now. Whatever happens with Diddy, it's going to be like, hey, no Diddy. Don't, you know, Diddy do it. That's just what happens. You are directly connected to something, whether it's true or false. Only thing that matters to me is just legally in the court of law, the IRS, whoever's handling this, if they clear him, then okay. Even if he does have something to do with it. If he is cleared by the government, then you move on and you just enjoy his baseball career. But you're right, it'll always be connected to this, and I hope he has nothing to do with it. I think it's crazy that the person that he probably trusted the most, other than maybe his family, his wife, was doing him dirty like that. It's just hard for me to believe that $16 million can go missing like that. That he can make 25 bets per day for 3 years and no one sees nothing. That's crazy to me. Shohei had to have known that he liked to gamble at least. It's not like, there's no way Shohei sitting down and saying, had no idea he liked to gamble. Mm-hmm. I'm with the man every day. Never seen him place one bet. That's the thing. Good on his crew. by painting this picture and making sure Shohei looks like he is as clean as a whistle. But guarantee you Shohei knew my man like to bet. But it's all about what happens legally, and it looks like Shohei's going to be fine.
Well, and he's going to be fine, but this story is just going to follow forever and ever and ever. I mean, we were talking about other examples of this happening, and I forget whether it was you or Curtis, but mentioned Michael Jordan with his gambling scandal. Like, there will always be people going, okay, did you leave the league briefly, you know, to honor your father? Or did you do it because you were being punished by the commissioner for gambling?
Exactly.
So, you know what
we'll
I mean? There's always lingering questions people have. And, you know, you can say, like, that's in bad taste to wonder that. I'm sorry, but these are things that, like, rumors just kind of follow.
You know what we say about Jordan? The GOAT.
Yeah.
He still got it.
Yeah, it doesn't affect your legacy big time in any way, but there's always going to be this cloud now around Ohtani, and it doesn't dampen his greatness. But there will always be people that have a question about, like, how much he knew. And even if you're someone who settled on, like, I think he's completely innocent, I think that's just what happens with famous people. It's what happens with legacy. It's what happens with public reputations when rumors abound. Just a fascinating conversation. We also wanted to tell you the latest with this case. The latest update from this morning, by the way, from Alden Gonzalez of ESPN, is that Mizuhara, the translator, has surrendered to law enforcement this morning. He's in federal custody, officially scheduled to appear in court at 1 p.m. today. The expectation is he will be let out on bond. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, drafting Seahawks. We got a couple linebackers to look at. Don't go anywhere.